A monk asked Dongshan, "When the master is not well, is there still someone who is well or not?" Dongshan said, "There is." The monk asked, "Can the one who's not ill look after you?" Dongshan said, "I have the opportunity to look after him." The monk asked, "How is it when you look after him?" Dongshan said, "When I observe him, I don't see any illness." And this story continues. Dongshan then said to the monks, "When you leave the skin bag you inhabit, where will you go and see me again?" The monks didn't answer. Dongshan then had his attendants help him shave his head, bathe, and get dressed. He then had the bell rung to summon the monks so that he could bid them farewell. So we've been studying this koan for the past few days, and I was interested to see that in Dongshan's life, this was his final teaching. Well, not quite final, as you'll see. He was, as Josh and David have been discussing, one of our ancestors, one of the people who's alleged to have found the Soto school, the Cao Dong school, which bears part of his name, Dongshan. And when this story happens, he wasn't just ill. He was dying. Maybe that makes a difference for you. It certainly made a difference for me. When we recited just now the gatha on opening the sutra, some of the lines say the Dharma is rarely encountered, even in hundreds of millions of thousands or whatever it is, lots and lots and lots of time. But of course, you know, our teaching is that the Dharma is encountered everywhere, all the time, right in front of your noses. Right in front of all of our noses, the Dharma is manifesting as wellness, unwellness, fear, sadness, joy, anger, all the numerous thoughts that continually arise in the mind, all of the conditions of the body, well and unwell. This is all the Dharma manifesting. But that rarity is that so few of us see that the Dharma is all these things, and we narrow the field, we sometimes say. We make our world very small, tiny little world of this and that. We feel like we're not practicing correctly because dot, dot, dot. And we could go around the room right now, and every one of you and me too, could give evidence of why we are not practicing correctly. And that evidence is based on what minds do, which is divide the universe into little pieces. So it's rare to encounter the Dharma as the Dharma because we keep saying to ourselves that, yeah, some of it's the Dharma, but some of it definitely isn't. And so much of the suffering in the world is from that little voice, which sometimes is a very loud voice saying, but some of it isn't. Some of you aren't. The divisions of the heart are false divisions. There's no division in the heart. There's no division in the world. Dongshan wrote the beautiful poem that we recited now 2 days in a row. So obscure in some ways, it bears reading and rereading and chanting and rechanting, because every once in a while, maybe you're having this experience, the words come forth, just like a flower comes forth, or a pain in the knee comes forth, and we recognize it, and we know what Dongshan is talking about, and all the Buddhas and ancestors have been talking about for eons, in their very particular personal ways. Everybody speaks of this Dharma differently. It can get a little confusing. We, in Boundless Way Zen, up the ante on confusion by having three, and actually four, when we count James Ford off on the left coast, four guiding teachers, and then numerous, we have three Dharma holders, and then we have senior Dharma teachers and Dharma teachers and leaders of all kinds speaking words of the Dharma. Paul's beautiful encouragement talks during the day before he goes around with the kiyosaku. Our Dharma holders speaking in the evening, the chant leaders chanting with their full hearts. These are the words of the Dharma. These are expressions of the Dharma. And all the different chants and readings in the our liturgy book, if you look at them from the mind of division, if you hear all these teachings from the mind of division, they might seem different. And they are. They are different. A heron hidden in the moon is not the same. The heron and the moon are not the same, although sometimes they appear different. There is differentiation. And deep at the root of all human beings, we're all seeking the same thing. And so when we get into a teacher seat, we have to find a voice for speaking these things. And Dongshan was a brilliant speaker of these things. It's been so many years and years since he was on the planet as a living human being, but still he's alive because his words inspire us. Who knows what will happen in the future? I had a fantasy while we were discussing this koan and the consequences of racism and global warming and all the suffering on the planet, of a sesshin that was held millions and millions of years ago, maybe in this very spot, by the dinosaurs. They were probably sitting around, and one of them dared to say, "You know, I feel that something's happening, and I don't know. Maybe we're not going to be here in the future." And the other dinosaurs said, "Oh, shut up and just do your zazen." This voice that Josh first brought into the sesshin of, hey, wake up, look around, look at all the different ways that we are dividing our hearts and the suffering that causes. There's suffering enough without us adding extra. There's suffering everywhere just by being born into a body, as we know from the five remembrances, which we chant every day. Even though that's not specifically a Zen text, it sure is an important thing to remind ourselves of, that no matter what happens, all of us, every single one of us, is going to get sick. If we're lucky, we're going to get old, and we're going to die. There's no question, and everyone, every being will die. The planet, even if we don't destroy it in the next 50 years, it'll die when the sun goes nova. It's just going to happen. Well, at least we think so, but we don't really know. So this moment is so important, because in this moment, we get to heal the division in the heart, and maybe, just maybe, the amount of great suffering in the world will be diminished. Maybe in just a minuscule way. It doesn't make any difference how much, because we can't be attached to the outcome of this. Then we're just living in our heads. So to wake up right now, and when I say wake up to this present moment includes the past and all the lessons of our ancestors, and it includes the future. It includes what is to come. Even though we can't see it clearly, we can see that something is coming. And even if it's just personal to us, something is coming. And we are so afraid of that something that it paralyzes us, and we don't live the fullness of our lives. And that's a shame. And it's not just a shame, it's painful. It increases the amount of pain in the world. So Dongshan is dying. If he was another kind of person, he might have had a different ending story. And I was pleased to find in a book of Korean kongans, they're called koans, this koan, which is about Daeshan, who was a contemporary of Dongshan, but in a different lineage tradition. We know Daeshan because he came down early to a meal once, and the cook yelled at him. We love that story in Bao Mesui Zen because we love our cooks so much. But this was the very last thing that happened for Daishan. Daishan had been ill, and because of this, a monk asked him, "Is there someone who is not ill?" Sound familiar? And Daishan said, "Yes," just like Dongshan did. The monk asked, "What about the one who is not ill?" And Daishan said, It's a little bit of a different answer, but kind of reflective of our which is maybe that'll be the name of this session. So back to Dongshan, he had the bell rung to summon the monks so that he could bid them farewell. You can imagine this moment. This beloved teacher, he wasn't very old. I think I used to think he died old, but he was 63. And some of my best friends are 63 and older. He appeared to have passed away. And the monks began wailing piteously without let up. You can imagine the scene in the Zendo. Oh, there he was, shaved, bathed, and dressed, and boom, he leaves this mortal coil. But he suddenly opened his eyes, and he said to them, "You homeless monks who are attached to things, don't be attached to anything. That's the authentic practice. What's the difference between life and death?" And then he instructed the temple director to organize a delusion banquet. In this translation, Andy Ferguson made this translation, and he said, "The monk's adoration for Dongshan was unending." It's like, they're all crying and wailing and weeping, and then suddenly, food! We can have a banquet! Yay! This will be fantastic. Maybe we'll have cashews! 7 days later, the food was prepared. Dongshan had a final meal with his Sangha, and then he said this, and this is direct translation, "Don't make a big deal about it. Don't make a big deal about it. When I pass away, don't go carrying on about it." And then he returned to his room, and he sat in Zazen, and he died. So Dongshan is pointing us in this delusion banquet, I feel, to something that we've been touching upon all week. Every Dharma talk and encouragement talk so far has touched into this. So we're in a state of emergency, and yet... David and I used to have a book of death stories. I think it's still in the library, Zen Death Stories. We were very cheerful when we were younger. We'd read these stories. And we had two friends, not Zen practitioners, and one night we were all reading these stories to each other. And one of the stories was about Roshi Taji, who was a 19th century Japanese teacher, close to our contemporary. And he was dying, and he and his students were weeping and wailing and doing all the things that we hope you're going to do when we die. But he said, they said to him, "Is there anything we can do for you?" And he said, "Yes, there is. There's this particular cake that I really, really like, and they only sell it at this one shop in downtown Tokyo. Would you go and get the cake for me?" So a few people rush out to get the cake, and they bring it back to him, and it's just the right cake. It's the one he wants. In my fantasies of Japanese pastry, it's one of those cakes with the red bean paste inside. And he takes a bite of it, and he says, "Oh, this cake is delicious!" And then he dies. So what is it? Dongshan yells at his monks' final teachings, "Don't make such a fuss!" And Daishan yells, "Oh, oh!" And Roshi Taji says, "Yum, yum." Is there a difference between these three statements? I don't really feel like there is. As James spoke to us about last night and yesterday in the Dharma talk, or two nights ago, I guess, and yesterday in the Dharma talk, it is possible to live a life where we are so open, our hearts are so open that we can feel the pain of the world, the terrible state that we're in, and actually get up off our cushions and do something about that, not from a place of despair, but from a place of aliveness, that it's possible to have great joy at the same time that we have this great sorrow, because as Dongshan points out to us, the one who is well and the one who is not well, they're not different. And sorrow and joy are not different. I've been talking to many of you about one of my favorite movies of all time now, that I just saw a few weeks ago, called Inside Out. And I think some of you have seen it. Josh recommended it to David and me, and we don't get to go to the movies much, but we went to the movies. It's so exciting. And in this movie, if you haven't seen it, it's about a little girl, 11-year-old girl, who's going through some hard times. And we get to see inside her brain, and we get to see all of the different forces that run her. The memory banks are like file folders, and there's different emotions that are embodied: joy and sadness and anger and fear and disgust. Those are her five emotions that run her. And two of the great things about this movie, the first one is that it gives primacy to sadness as a force inside mature human beings. It seems like joy should take the ascendancy. In the movie, there's certainly a pull towards that, but that's not where it goes, and that's hinted at from the very beginning of the movie till the very end. That joy and sadness have to be together. They actually go on an adventure together. It's a cartoon, not live action. And the second thing that it points to is that there's no self. I couldn't believe it. It's a very popular, making lots of money, cartoon movie for kids. And it basically says that there's nobody in charge inside. It's a panel of these emotions and all these different beings who are serving this skin bag. And in the movie, we get to see all these different skin bags and all their little panels that are running them. It's kind of wonderful. Cats and dogs have very different kinds of panels, by the way. And 11-year-old boys are very different from 11-year-old girls, and etc. But here we have it again. This teaching, this really important teaching. This is not about hearing about the plight of the world and just going off into the corner in the dark and despairing. And it's not about ignoring. As I like to say, we have three forces within us that help us to stay stuck in our endless ruminations and behavioral patterns that keep causing us suffering. One of them is trying to engage in a way to destroy the thing that's causing us the pain, what's sometimes called the fight reaction or the fight response. I'm going to fix this thing. I'm going to destroy that thing. I'm going to stay divided. It's all based on division. If only that was gone, then I would be a good Zen student. Maybe the delusion is no more thoughts. Maybe the delusion is no more emotions. So dangerous. What kind of a person would you be if you didn't have any thoughts anymore? If you didn't have any emotions? And if you didn't have any pain? What would that be like? Maybe it sounds good to you. But, oh man, I don't think so. It sounds like what I like to call Zen robot. And then the second force is the force of turning away, of ignoring, of running. It's sometimes called the flight response, the flight reaction. We see these things in worms. We see them in animals of all kinds. I bet we even could see them in cells. This going towards and going away from. This impulse to destroy and to ignore. And then the third force is one I learned from another of our ancestors, Hongzhi, when he talks about becoming a partner to your delusions, to the dust, he says. But that's what he's talking about, like getting married to it. So maybe we have an angry feeling and an angry thought and a tightening in the body, and we say, I am going to obey the precepts and not be angry anymore, damn it. Or we say, there's no anger, everything is fine. Stop bugging me, you angry part of me. Or we say, yep, I am just an angry person. That's becoming its partner. That's who I am. Yep, just an angry person. I'm just going to be angry all the time. Who cares? So Zen offers us another option of how to live our lives. Not to try to get rid of stuff, not to try to run away from stuff, not to fall in love and get married to our stuff, but to expand the field of awareness so that it includes everything, and to see that this everything is no other than our own self. This little limited self is not in opposition to some big self that someday we're going to realize and then we'll be like gods on earth. Both of those things are part of the delusion, part of the splitting in the heart. We already are Buddhas. It's a done deal. The problem is we don't see it. We favor division. We favor delusion. It's human to be like that. And even that favoring of the delusion is the Dharma manifesting itself as the favoring of delusion. There are no loopholes in this practice. Everything that arises is it. That was one of Dongshan's famous lines, just this is it. And Dongshan is famous for another koan, which I will end with. Many of you know it. A monk came to him and said, this was when he was a bit more vigorous before his death, before the delusion banquet. A monk came to him and said, where is the place where there's no heat and no cold? Some of you know this one, right? Where is the place? Where is the place? It's not Long Beach, California, as we've heard from James Ford. Would that it were, but nope. It's not anywhere on earth. Where is the place where there is no heat or no cold? And Dongshan replies, when it's hot, let the heat kill you. And when it's cold, let the cold kill you. In other words, killing might seem kind of violent. It was a long time ago in China, and maybe there was more openness to violence. We know this from certain cats. But this killing is not a violent act. It's a healing act. It's the healing of the end of separation. The word religion in one of the translations from Latin, there are a couple of different translations, this is just one of them, means to bind together again. To bring back the parts that have been scattered and ignored, that have been stuffed in the bag of unconsciousness. To bring everything into this present moment of awareness. This is what we're practicing. Our religion is wholeness. Our religion is expanding the field of awareness to include everything with no things outside of it. So this letting the heat kill us, letting the cold kill us, it's becoming completely one with the heat. It's beginning to understand that heat is just hot, and that cold is just cold. So when we're hot, we sweat, and we need to drink more water. When we're cold, we shiver and need to get a blanket from the basket in the parlor. This is what it means to die to the self, to die to circumstances. And this is what Dongshan did in his own death, and Daishan and Roshi Taji, and all of us someday will come to the same place. And it doesn't matter how we go out, because the manner of our death will be perfect. Unpredictable, but just right. So the delusion banquet begins. The delusion banquet is the great taste of life and death and heat and cold and self and other all coming together, spread out before you to feast upon, to enjoy. Dongshan says in the Song of the Jeweled Mirrored Samadhi, wondrously embraced within the real, drumming and singing begin together. Penetrate the source and travel the pathways. Embrace the territory and treasure the roads. This life that we're living now will be different in a moment. Right now, the only thing to do is to embrace it and treasure it. Well, I guess we could do something else. But why bother? It's so brief. And it is what we get to work with together. Thank you. Carol, can you speak up?
No, I'm five questions. It's a beautiful teaching. How do we make it available to people who aren't practicing? How do we help someone approaching that? How can we make it okay?
Well, it might not be okay. You know, it's an interesting question to have rise up. It reminds me of people who ask how to teach their children to practice meditation. And the answer we usually give is, you do it. You practice. And that way, if you're practicing, if you've healed this division even to a little extent, you can be fully present with a person in any condition. Or fully. You can be present to people in any condition. You can sit with someone who's dying and breathe with them. You don't have to read them sutras or tell them about Buddhism. That would be ridiculous. Maybe not. Depends on the person. But yeah, it's up to you to heal that division. And then when you walk through the world, you don't have to be Buddhist. Oh, Mike is around?
Yep.
Thank you, Melissa. As I was hearing you go on with the story about the fact that he was just ill, he was dying. First off, what came to me was, would it be better to talk about the fact that I go to volunteer hospice?
Maybe you can talk about what?
Talk about my hospice volunteer.
Hospice.
Maybe you can talk about his hospice volunteering.
Well, I started volunteering at hospice, but I think if I said, and it has helped. But this one particular story I was thinking of was several weeks ago, I was sitting with this woman who she had been bedridden since she went there, she had a stroke, suddenly she decided she needed to go somewhere. And she started trying to get out of bed. And there wasn't really any danger of her falling out of bed, but she looked very, very uncomfortable. And I was trying to tell her, no, you don't need to go anywhere, you don't need to go anywhere. And she wasn't excited. And she kept trying to get out. And as a volunteer, I'm not supposed to So I got up out of my chair, stopped the panic a little bit, not knowing what to do. So our nurses stayed out the hall, got their attention. And the nurse's aide came in and just sat down in the chair I would have to sit in and just took her hand. And just started talking to her and listening to whatever she was saying about where she was going. And suddenly the trouble ended. And,
that's right. Yeah.
Well, and the great teaching of doing nothing, and I think of all of us sitting on the cushion and the one who wants to get up and run away. And we start panicking. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And the possibility of holding our own hand, of being with ourselves in the extreme moments. We practice. And how wonderful for you to put yourself in this opportunity to practice, to learn, to see what happens. And then whether we get it right or don't get it right doesn't make any difference. We learn this great skill of doing nothing. Yeah, being with. Thank you.
And in relation to both those two comments, I want to say, don't underestimate the importance of how you hold your heart. This is it is of cosmic scale importance. And so how do we be with someone who's dying? We do it by holding our heart wide open, by being with the one who is also not ill, and really loving the one who is there, the one who is here, this world, this life, this suffering being.
And I want to just say in regard to this is so important, but if you hear this teaching and you go, yep, I'm going to do that, then you're going to hell real fast. Because it's not something you can decide to do. We learn to do this, just as David said, on the cushion. We learn to do it by being good companions to our own suffering. And then that knowledge awakens something in us so that we can go out into the world as bodhisattvas. But if we say, yeah, I'm going to be a real, I'm going to go volunteer at hospice. I love that nurse, right? You know, she's not thinking, I'm going to be a bodhisattva and I'm going to blah, 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 blah. She just holds her hand because she has faith in what Josh was just describing. So important to know this. This is not a strategy. This is a way of living. So we have Pearson and James. Did you say anything? Okay. So Pierce, James, and then Liz.
Thank you, Melissa, for talking about this koan in terms of differentiation or division. Because I've been struggling with this koan a little bit and kind of resisting it. When I first heard this line spoken by Dongshan, when he says, well, I have the opportunity to take care of that one, I felt a distinct disappointment because I thought, oh, surely that one should be taking care of Dongshan, or by extension of me. It occurred to me that that's what I'm looking for. Looking for Zen to take care of me. And then I noticed that there's slight variations in the translations. So that one of the translations says something like, when I take care of him, I notice that he's not sick. And that one troubled me because it seems to maintain the differentiation. Whereas in the first one, I think it was, the one that Josh read, it says, when I take care of him, I no longer feel that there is sickness, or something like that.
Right.
But what you said in regard to division or lack of division is perhaps best embodied by the first translation. And that's the one I like, because it does away with me and that one, and one taking care of the other. And when I turn in this direction, I don't feel that there is sickness. That
right.
Just the distinction between well and not well has been obliterated. And so it's I've kind of gotten over the feeling of well, I don't know if I have. Maybe I'm still longing for that. But at least I can see where the koan's pointing. So thank you for that.
Right, because it's not seeing no sickness as opposed to seeing sickness. Right. The translation that Josh read is the one we use in Bama Sui Zen, and we inherited it from John Tarrant. It is a nice translation. But it's also nice to struggle. So it's good to have these other... The translation I didn't read you is really different. It's not even about caring for the one who's not sick. It's just about seeing the one who's not sick sees the one who's not sick. Or I see them both. So it's just a very different one. So they're all different. Chinese is hard to translate, I guess. So I would say just, it's great you let yourself be disturbed.
I think just reflecting more on this question about this experience of being with somebody who's dying and the arising of a sort of not to in that spot, right? Like we chant this every day that I am of the nature to die, right? So, you know, the being with is the, it's not charity, right? It's not from this, like, I'm well and I'm taking care of you. It comes from this place of me too.
Yeah. That's very important. Again, no division, like we were talking about yesterday, between self and other.
Yeah.
Yeah. To not other anybody. Me too.
That's the holding our heart.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah.
And the lovely thing about the me too is when someone's dying, you don't say, oh, I know how you feel.
Right.
Right? The heart vibrates and something is happening, some great mystery that we both honor me too and honor the mystery of separation, whole universe, both these things.
Yeah. So Liz and then Alan?
And then Paul.
And then Paul.
I'm confused by Doshan's, Zhangshan's admonishment of his monks when they are wailing in response to hearing that he's dying, because it seems contrary to all of his other teachings and to your teaching. It seems like they're being killed by their grief.
Yeah.
And their beloved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they
often
have
that instead. That's good confusion.
I just want to appreciate your insight of being killed by grief when grief when grieving comes, be killed by grief. And there is no received... this is not a revealed truth, this religion. This is all of these teachers doing their best to express it as best they can, given karma and whatnot. And we need to feel our way into it for ourselves, discern what we discern, struggle with what we struggle. There's a beautiful line in Dogen's Zui Monkey, Shobo Genzo Zui Monkey, not to be confused with Shobo Genzo for Sea Monkeys.
That's a nice way to remember that.
Which are his informal talks. in which he says, don't be in such a hurry to understand. So, see what you see. Struggle with what you struggle. This is the place of engagement vividly arising for you. And I also didn't like that part of it. But I wouldn't have said it like that.
Who knows? We'll see. Let's see if any of us are around for that. But that's the thing, that everyone is going to have their own death. And so Dongshan expresses his personality, Daishan expresses his personality, and Roshi Taji expresses his personality, and there's an infinite variety. And, you know, some Zen masters are real hard asses. We could direct you to them if you're interested. What color is your card? Is it pink?
Yeah.
It's pink. Yeah, just pink. Like it's a
coral.
Bait and switch. Oh, it's coral. Thank you, Jisha. It's a more masculine coral. But that's the infinite variety of the personality is not something we're trying to squelch. That's really important to know. Because we can say, I don't want to be like that. And then there's the division again. I'm not saying this to you, Liz. I'm saying this in general, because I'd really appreciate your question and comment, too. I didn't like it. But it's what he said. It's what he did. It's how he was. And there's some point in there that might be connected to what you said about dying to the grief, dying in the grief, dying in the objecting. You know, our minds object. Can we die to the objecting? Can we die to everything? That's our invitation. And you don't have to understand any of this.
When my grandfather died, I was around, and the day after, I was in my grandmother's apartment with my two sisters, and we were in the kitchen crying. And my grandmother came in, and she says, "What's all this fuss about? We have things to do." And I was really upset with her for the same reason. This is my granddad. This is your partner, your life partner. But that was not my grandmother's way. And I have come to appreciate her more and more over time. There is not one way through. Mm-hmm.
So, Alan and Paul and Dominic.
So, in one of my other lives, and I don't mean reincarnation, I mean now, in one of my other lives, I'm a scholar. And as such, when you started to tell the story that sounds suspiciously like the Dongshan story, only it's about Daishan.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
My scholarly instincts say, well, this is the same story, and the names are similar, and there was some translation into Korean, and now I don't know that that's the case, but that's a strong hypothesis for anyone that's done textual editing. So what I like about this, is that, and maybe somebody's looked into it, but what I like about that possibility is that it means that this story too right, has no stable self.
And
that one of the many things I treasure about Buddhism is that, you know, we don't have a Bible or a Quran or a Talmud. You know, we've got this mess of sutras, and some we like and some we don't like, and you know, different versions, and so we don't have the temptation to acknowledge the emptiness of the self, only to then put it in a book or, you know, a body of teachings, even the koans.
Yes.
So thank you for this, you know, weird possible alternate version with the groaning in it,
yeah,
which has just really enriched the whole.
Well, and just to say, it is also Andy Ferguson translated this from Chinese. Mm-hmm. So, but who knows, right? I think your point is something more important than these two particular texts.
Yeah.
You're extrapolating from the experience. This is how our minds work. We tell these stories, and we think they're the same stories also, but, you know, they're not. The story I tell about myself now seems like the same old shit. And it's really different from the story I used to tell, maybe. You know, that to be a little bit wary of even our received texts. I love that. Thank you.
And if I could just offer how I might phrase it. So it's not... So although you're not wrong that the story has no stable self, the thing that's important here is that, in fact, the truth has no stable self.
Paul?
I really do appreciate hearing the koans, not just simply about the different translation, but just the opportunity to hear them again and again. Because I find that I'll grab onto certain words. I think I have to really narrow it down. The whole story sometimes can be just a bit much for me. And the word that was really popping out to me today is this aspect of opportunity.
Mm.
I must admit, uh-huh, this is already a word for me. But I heard it today where I'm not really sure I heard it in the prior days, this aspect of opportunity. And when you said it today, Melissa, this image came up for me when I was a much younger man, and I was with a lady friend of mine under a Texas night sky. Texas night skies are really big, really. And I was looking at all the stars, and it came over me that... And I said this out loud as we were really just getting to know each other. I said this out loud. I said, I am so insignificant. That I am so insignificant. And immediately I said, and I choose to do good. And it was such an opening for me. And it wasn't really received very well, by the way. Who knows where she is now? But it wasn't much longer. But I think this is what I hear in this koan, is that this opportunity. And it's really available. It's available to all of us that's there. You know, one level, I think that I made a choice ever since that day to do good. And I think right now, as I'm saying this out loud, that I'm not really sure I actually have a choice. I think this opportunity for all of us. This holding this person's hand in the hospice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This seeing each other in the Zendo here. Even though we're not looking, we're seeing, we're being present to each other. I think this is when we get in the car and when we leave. This is the opportunity that is available to all of us.
Thank you. And that's another answer to Carol's question.
So when my grandmother was dying, I went to Poland to take care of her and to be with her. And she was in this really uncomfortable bed. And so I lay there and massage her feet and so forth. And one day she said, "Will you go get me a coffee and a pastry?" This is a Polish hospital. Anything goes. So I said, "Yeah." So I went and I came back with the coffee. And she said, "Can you put some cream in it?" I said, "Yes," and put a little cream. And she said, "Put a little more." So I put a little more. And she said, "A little more." And I put a little more. And she said, "Now that's too much."
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. And with that, we'll end for the day. Thank you.